please rise.
Councilperson Hanser, will you lead us in the pledge to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'll take the roll call. Councilmember Hanser?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Hussler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
Council members Ingram and Watson have asked for an excuse tonight. They both have other duties they have to do, so I accept the motion to excuse them.
I will move to excuse Councilmember Watson and Ingram.
I'll second that.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is for members of the audience to come forward and speak to anything that's not on the agenda except for the consent agenda. So anything that's not on tonight's agenda, if you'd like to address the council, you can come forward. Anyone in the audience would like to come forward and talk to the council about anything that's on their mind? Okay, don't look all of you. Time to get a vote. Okay, fine. We'll move on. Okay, next up is introduction of our new sergeant.
I move the adoption of the consent.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, consent agenda is done.
That was just a test.
Chief Knapp.
Good morning, council member. Good morning. Good afternoon to all of you. Travis Card to my right. You met him 5 years ago when he came here as a patrol officer. He's either grown or I've shrunk. I'm assuming that I've shrunk. He's a Wazoo graduate.
Yay.
I knew that would be. I want to tell you, he's entirely suited by his character and by his work ethic and his humanity for his calling. He's highly competent. He is an exceptional leader, and he's admired by his associates. He has very high expectations for himself and those that work for him. I am blessed that he works for me and not the other way around. I would hope to live up to your high measure. He's married to Tricia. He has two children, Weston, Wyatt, too. He is the face of Ferndale Police Department's future. It is a bright one. And it's my pleasure every day to come to work and to be associated with people like Travis Card. Now you may embarrass him.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you, guys.
You have now had the right to
shoot. Short, so I guess we're in trouble. Yeah. Now it's time to run.
Absolutely.
Thank you for attending. Okay, council, I'd like to change the agenda. Your letters. Oh, there we go. Okay. So I'd like to move up to item D, the rural sunset speed limit ordinance, and to item E, the Planning Commission resident discussion. We're going to move that up on the agenda. So, acceptable to council?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so we'll start with the rural sunset speed limit ordinance and our public works director.
Hi, good evening. Jas Marlega, public works director. And since our committee meeting, I think a couple weeks ago, where we had a discussion about increasing the speed limit on Rural and Sunset Public Works, we've had a little bit more time to take a little bit closer look at road conditions, accident history, traffic counts, and so what I'm bringing forward tonight is, based on this current review, just from an engineering standpoint, there really isn't a reason why not to increase the speed limit from an engineering standpoint. So it comes down to more like a policy decision. And so what the city has is we have ordinance 1660, actually probably the original one, it's 1543, where the city has a blanket ordinance, 25 miles per hour just across the city for all city streets. But then a recommendation can come forward where the city council can approve increasing that speed. Now, the ordinance, it refers to arterial streets, and rural is a collector street. That's the functional classification. But the city in the past has approved speed limit increases on other collector streets. So I just wanted to point that out. And so I don't know if there's any other...
clarification. So it wouldn't take a change of ordinance because we've already approved it in other cases. So why would we have to change the ordinance?
State law requires us to amend our... We have a speed limit ordinance that's required by state law anytime we go above and beyond 25-mile-hour speed limit, which is our adopted level in the city of Ferndale. So we need to amend our previous ordinance to change this to 35.
Even though we have done that on the streets?
Yes.
But
we have to specifically call out the change we're going to make on this section of road.
Yeah, so this, like, here's our current ordinance. So each street where it's not 25 miles per hour, it's listed on here.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so there are a number of streets on the 35 miles per hour. So we have like Portal Way, Brown Road, Main Street, Barrett, LeBounty, Hovander. So the majority of those are arterial streets, but there are a few in there that are collectors, which that's what rural is, a collector street.
Okay. Simple change, just based on direction from council tonight. We need to bring it back next meeting.
Okay. So the council could vote to go in this direction, and then we'd come back on the ordinance.
We could direct staff to bring ordinance back in.
Right, because what we look at, like, the street alignment, traffic volume, the type of traffic volume, accident history, the pavement, site distance, the spacing of the intersections. So, I mean, there's a number of things that need to be looked at from an engineering standpoint before making any kind of recommendation on a change on the speed limit. So that part there is very important. And so that's what we've looked at that. In this case, from an engineering standpoint, there's no reason why not to increase the speed limit. Except it goes back to our original ordinance, and then it's up for city council discussion.
Okay, questions of staff? Councilperson Goodrich?
Well, I was just going to say that I've kind of supported this idea for a long time, and I'm glad that Councilmember Olson brought this up again because I support this. So I'd like to make a motion that we direct staff to come back with the ordinance to increase the speed limit on rural to 35.
I'll second that.
Okay, and I think we have members of the audience who would like to speak on this too. So any questions of staff, or is this discussion? Questions of staff?
Are there any objections within staff for this increase at all?
No, the only thing is we'll have to purchase some new signs and then install those. And then
no safety concerns?
No, not at this time. But we should be monitoring the speeds on that section of road. And then also as development occurs, then taking another look at it.
Okay, thank you.
Now, and everybody on council is aware of what section we're talking to? Any more questions of staff?
Okay, so they'll just be on rural from Slater to Sunset.
If they vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Discussions from council, or should I see if anyone in the audience wants to speak? Anyone from the audience would like to speak on this issue? There's some lady making eyes at me. Okay, that wasn't so. You didn't jump up, so that you missed your chance. Okay, council, you have a motion and a second before you. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. So at the very next council meeting, we'll put forward. Can that be consent? Consent? Because they basically voted for it.
Yeah.
So consent, we'll move to consent again. All right. Next up is the Planning Commission residency discussion. Planning Director?
City Clerk will, and then I'll do color if necessary.
All right. I guess it falls to me since I wrote the staff report. Yori was busy. thank you, council members. Just basically, the question has arisen whether or not we should install a specific residency requirement within the Ferndale Municipal Code related to Planning Commission. We have various boards and commissions. Not all of them have the same types of rules related to residency. Quite a few have what I've called a hybrid residency requirement, where generally a majority of the members must be residents, and then we've called for some special circumstances. For Planning Commission is totally silent. I don't know the history behind that. There's nothing that I can find in previous minutes as to whether or not that was just simply an oversight. My guess is that because we're a smaller city, as we very often do, we found code that is very similar in many other jurisdictions that was silent, and we just used it, and there was not necessarily a discussion about it. I believe this chapter initially, when it was created, was part of our recodification, perhaps two or three decades ago, and so it's never been changed. I did a quick analysis. It'd be somewhat difficult in the time frame I was given to do a full one, but I looked at 54 jurisdictions. I tried to do as many as I could that were similar in our population size, but not all, related to what are other planning commissions doing with their residency. About 66.7% of those other jurisdictions had a hybrid, where generally at least two of the members could be non-residents. The way they were allowed non-residents was to be different between those jurisdictions. Some might agree to just UGA residents. Some might agree to business owners or property owners in the city that weren't residents. One specific jurisdiction, I can't recall which one, said 3 miles outside city limits. So point which way, 3 miles. That one was odd to me, but so they had an actual mileage. I believe there were some within a specific zip codes as well. And obviously that type of geographical one within a zip code would be really focused depending on where you live. If there's a jurisdiction that really is just a zip code or they're outlying UGA, then it makes more sense. Ferndale zip code is pretty sprawling. That's a discussion for council. So all in all, there is a real mix over in Washington State, at least from the 54 jurisdictions I looked at, in terms of whether or not they do or do not allow residents. You'll see in the staff report I wrote, it's just an assumption, but it seems clear that these other jurisdictions see some type of value to allowing non-residents on for whatever reason, but it seems focused on whether or not they have a financial interest in the city, some type of development interest, or they're going to be annexed in the future. Those seem like kind of common themes in why they were allowing non-residents on their commissions. There doesn't appear to be a right or wrong way to do this. It definitely is a policy decision for the council, and I'll leave it at that if you have any other questions.
So, council, open discussion, because staff is looking for a direction. We'll come back with an ordinance for you. Your choices are varied. In the past, we have had some difficulties finding a giant number of candidates to come forward on the Planning Commission. Presently, it's filled at its complete capacity now. But we have had some difficulties in terms of having a lot of applicants come forward. So at this point, complete council discussion, and I believe I saw Lloyd first.
Yeah.
Councilperson Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I recall just a lot of conversations we had regarding all of the committees and advisory committees and arts groups, and we kind of, Ferndale's unique in that we have a lot of people in the Heritage Society, the old settlers, that really have Ferndale's best interests at heart, but they live outside that little ever-shifting city line, the city boundaries. And I think it's these people that fall into that category of maybe the UGA that they're potentially impacted by the actions of the City Council and the Planning Commission. I think it's really important that there's maybe a couple of those people that would be allowed on. I'm not so super keen on people that are outside the school district or outside of the UGA, but I think that's there's a strong balancing effect of the people that are living in the UGA, and they bring a certain maybe a rural or agricultural balance to the urban push-pull action.
So your recommendation is the UGA boundaries, within the UGA boundaries, and two?
Two people from
Houston School District.
Okay, we'll get kind of a good chart going here. Councilperson Goodrich and then Mutchler.
As an ex-Planning Commission member, I know at times it was great value to have somebody that had building experience on there that could come in as a builder, especially I know when we were talking about roof lines and the other things, there of great benefit. I know when Sam Bolios was on the Planning Commission, it was good to have somebody with a business background that could talk about businesses and some of the things associated with that. So I can see the value of one of the things that Sam says of maybe making one of those positions a person that has a business interest in town but may not necessarily live in town. I could think they could bring some insight into the Planning Commission that we may not otherwise get based off of the experiences. I also think a UGA is worthwhile. So my thing would be one person from the UGA and then a business person that may not necessarily live in the city or the UGA, but have a long-standing interest in the city.
You mean own a business in the city?
Yeah. Let's say, just throwing out a name, Bob Bell, you know, who doesn't live here in the city, but he's very active in the city and others and interests in the city or something like that.
He doesn't even live in Whatcom County.
Island County. Yeah, that could be, you know, a discussion. Do we put a boundary on that? I don't know.
A better example probably would be someone like Walt Pullman. But Walt's still own a business in town. I mean, now you start splitting the hair. Walt owns a building, but doesn't own a business.
Yeah, those are two. Well, I guess you could say property owner.
John Freeberg, who lives out in Linden. Everson.
Okay, so we kind of know your direction is. Yours was one from UGA, one business person, and we'll discuss the parameters, maybe the business person later. Okay. Councilperson Mutcher?
Thank you. I am. I'm supportive of allowing a maximum of two. I, to make it simple, I would just say the school district, which would include the UGA, I think. And the reason why is since serving on council and since attending nearly every Planning Commission meeting over the last few years, I'm impressed with what an important committee that is. It's hugely important. At the same time, dismayed at how few citizens step to the plate and want to do that. It's not paid. There's no grandiose rewards for it, and you got to deal with a city council that sometimes goes against you, and it's maybe not a lot of fun, but it's a really important commission. And I was struck by the occasions when the mayor hasn't always had enough, but not an abundance of choices. And so by making it the school district, you triple the population base from 11,000 to over 30,000. But what I wanted to address is I think some of the Planning Commission members who are uncomfortable with this, that I think there are some great checks and balances in our system that would keep, I don't know what the right word is, a renegade or rogue council member for doing something harmful to the city, which is, first of all, the mayor has to nominate. So you have that first check of a mayor who's going to have the interest of the city at heart. Council has to approve it, and I suspect that any council who has a nominee that's not from the city would probably take an extra look and want to have good reason for doing that. I think that would be in our nature to do that. Number three, he or she goes back to a planning commission where they are only one vote out of seven. And finally, that commission's decision eventually comes back to council to approve anyway. So I think there are a lot of checks and balances should council go that way. So for those reasons and for I won't name any names today, but I've thought of people that I thought would be terrific planning commission members, and I realized, they live 500 yards outside the city limits or something like that, so they're not qualified. So I would support two. I would support a broader geographic area that would include the school district and maybe even the entire 98248 geography. Thank you, Mayor.
Hey, can I just ask a clarifying question? Was your recommendation of two being there would always be two or up to
option? It's not required. It's up to the mayor and council. I would prefer all city residents, hands down. But if there was an exceptional person that seemed like they'd bring a great perspective, I'd like to consider that, be able to have the freedom to, but not required to.
And so for clarification on yours, it's school district boundaries or 98248 or?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
All right. Councilperson Hansen?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the 98248 is set by the federal government, by the Postal Service. It's not, there is no magic. We can have school district people that live within a mile or a half a mile of Blaine. They actually go past they're in the school district, but they're in the Blaine zip code. We have all of North Bellingham, which is Bellingham zip code. I frankly have an issue, period, with having it not be Ferndale residents. We struggle all the time with the fact that in the urban growth and in the vicinity of Ferndale, and I'm going to throw the library out as a big example of that, there's an attitude among a whole bunch of non-city residents that Ferndale City, us, ought to fund the library. So we're constantly struggling with this. They live outside of the city. They live inside the city. I'm kind of coming from the point of view, if it ain't broke, why are we fixing it? And I don't think it's broke.
Councilperson Olson, or do you want to go to the audience?
No, I would support the UGA, but I don't think I would give you a vested interest in maintaining someone who's could possibly be involved in decisions because their property is in it. I don't think I would do the zip code or the school boundary thing. That's too broad.
And UGA 1 or 2?
Good question.
Okay.
Which one? Where's our...
No. I mean UGA in terms of 1 or 2.
One or two people.
Because we're at full 7 now, and it's been thrown around. It seems to be a pretty consensus where, Brent had the kind of the hybrid, one from the other. John supports 2. Lloyd supports 2. Mel's a 0. You're a...
I would support up to 2, but like Mel, I would prefer that they be city residents. But if we can't get any,
that gives you more options.
I get you.
Then I would be.
And then before I open the audience, I'll read an email from Councilmember Watson. I'd like to see a hybrid residency requirement. All planning commission members shall reside within the city limits or the current boundaries of its UGA. I prefer people actually live in those areas and not just own land there. We'll see what the rest of the council thinks. Also, if we add this requirement, what happens if someone moves out of the eligibility area? Do they need to resign on the effective day of their move, or can they finish their term if the city so desires? I'd like the city to have discretion to keep someone if the planning commission's wrap up a long-term project that a new member would need too much time to catch up on, i.e. the planned action. Kind of a good point there. On that one, if you announce a move, I had this discussion with Councilperson Hansen in the example of Council Member Ken Downey. He had sold his house. He was renting a house, but he hadn't decided, I'm going to build a new house in Ferndale or move out. And so we called the state, and they said, you know, he has 6 months to decide if he hasn't picked a permanent residence. So, you know, unless someone's doing a permanent residency move, you have 6 months to make that decision. So someone can kind of stay a little longer than, you know, they could live in Anacortes, but if they're still deciding if they're going to come back or not, you have 6 months to kind of decide. So it's not always it's like not locked down. Councilperson Mutcher?
Yeah, thank you. Just a quick comment to Councilmember Hansen, that it's not broken. Don't fix it. It's currently kind of in a funny spot where the mayor could bring 7 members that live in China, because we have no prohibition against it right now. So there is really no ordinance.
I have fun getting that through the council.
I understand that. That
was going to be my next point, is once again, we have a situation where if the mayor thought there was somebody very qualified outside of the city, even outside of the UGA, but someone that was very qualified, the mayor could bring that name forward today.
So you're comfortable just leaving it, not changing?
I'm comfortable leaving it alone. I don't see it's broke.
Okay. I could go for that.
Yeah.
I see.
If you wanted to bring someone forward on the next vacancy that happened to be outside of the city limits, whether they're in the UGA or the school district. I wouldn't recommend bringing someone from Anacortes, or China, but because I don't think those would fly with the council. You can do that today because we have no prohibition against it.
So I'm going to refer to staff for a second. Is do we need more clarification on the ordinance, or we still could go that way?
No, we could just leave it.
We just leave it the way it is. Okay, interesting.
Can I finish? I didn't quite finish.
Okay.
It's a real issue if council makes a decision in a more restrictive sense, because we have a planning commission member that the mayor appointed last year who has, he's got a 25-year history in Ferndale. He's a builder. He's a real estate guy. He started checking out Cheesecake Company. He's done a fine job, I think, on the planning commission, but he just sold his house, and he's moved just right outside the city limits. He's perfectly fine if we do nothing. But if we trend in a direction that some people are interested in us doing and have a full, you must live in Ferndale, he would then have to leave the planning commission. So it's a current applicable issue right now.
Has there been a couple?
Councilperson Olson was next.
I kind of like that, what Mel is saying, except, again, I have to caution everybody to remember if we don't have Mr. Jensen sitting in that chair and we have somebody like we had in the past who theoretically, if he had four council members, could get seven members who don't even live in the city onto the commission, excuse me. So I think it's better that we have something, some sort of hard and fast rules written down so that we don't have options that can go south for us fast if the wrong person occupies that chair at some point in the future.
Planning Director, and then to Council Member Hansen.
I was going to suggest that if the council wished to go in a direction where really nothing was changed, possibly consider if individual planning commissioners did move outside of the city limits, possibly there'd be some way for that to be brought to council for a confirmation or something of that nature, so that we wouldn't have the potential for an exodus where seven or three or four planning commissioners who were once residents are now outside the city. That way you would be able to make that decision on a case-by-case basis.
Councilperson Hansen?
Has there been a proposal to limit the planning commission to inside the city?
There have been concerns raised by some planning commission members. I can't speak whether or not at all that we are going to have a planning commissioner that's no longer going to be a resident. Based on that, I believe there was an interest by some council members to have a discussion about whether or not we needed to make some type of change, one way or the other.
I still haven't changed my position, but I can see Keith's point that there should be some limiting factor. If we do nothing, then it's possible. It's at the mayor's discretion. I think I'd like to hogtie the mayor, too, and let him say
exactly
No more than two, and no more than they must live inside the urban growth would be my recommendation, and which falls in line with a couple of others. But I'm still mostly in favor of doing nothing, because we haven't had an issue at this point. Because the council confirms, even a rogue mayor would still have to get the confirmation of this council. Yeah.
I'll have our
and
clerk.
And four members of the council can change the rules anyway. So.
I'll have our clerk make a comment.
Just a quick clarification. I believe that if the council did limit it to UGA, I believe we would lose a planning commissioner under that proposal. He's in the zip code.
No.
Office. Is he in the
it would only be school district that would keep him in.
Okay. I don't want that to pressure you. I just wanted to give you that information. Based on what you do, we could lose the planning commission. We'd have to notice it.
I think there is maybe, well, not a giant amount of confusion, but it should be stated that I think it was very surprising for everyone to know. I think we've always assumed that we had an ordinance that said within the city limits only for planning commission. I remember when it first came on, that's how it was told with me, and then we didn't realize that we really didn't have that clarification. So I think, you know, all along I think everybody had anticipated or understood that we had to be a citizen, and this is kind of new information. Councilperson Goodrich, and then Mutchler.
Talking about the UGA, I just happened to glance up at the map. And if you move east, there's no UGA to the east of us. You know, if you was moved out on Axton or something like that, there's no UGA to go east. The only UGA is north, or really, it's not. I don't know if that UGA is a realistic thing, or to say the UGA plus maybe east over to northwest or something like that, because most of our housing is kind of east of the city. There's not a whole lot to the north or to the west of the UGA at this point in time.
Keeping in mind, I mean, less than a year ago, our UGA has been reduced by 56%.
Yeah. So, something to think about, that there's a lot of housing tracts and things that are just outside the city on the east but aren't in any UGA.
On a mileage thing, then. Sam talking about somebody had a 3 mile on every side of the city limits.
Oh, 3 mile outside?
I can't recall what jurisdiction it was. It might be in the spreadsheet I gave you.
Would that help our...
East Wenatchee.
East Wenatchee has a 3 mile radius.
I don't think so.
No. School district, like Gary said, in this situation, school district is, well, I guess you could probably call school district what used to be our UGA. Close. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I think the school district is safe, and the people that live in the school district, they feel like they're Ferndale, and they're paying taxes too, and they're doing things. I wanted to ask the mayor, with all due respect, I don't want council to hamstring you, because we already have to approve it, but... Do you have a feeling about this as to what would be helpful to you as the executive?
Well, I can see that. I mean, I was amazed at how many cities have recognized this, and I think, you know, probably studied and debated as much as we have, and have said, okay, there's an interest in having people that have that influence. If you decide to go that direction, and I think it would certainly, as you said, open up the number of candidates. And so then you choose. The cream rises to the top. The ultimate decision is still with the council. But we're gonna bring you rather than bring you one choice, we'd bring you, hopefully, you know, in a dream world, we'd have an argument about who that group is. You know, we'd have more. So I don't think you can ever have too many good people. So I think some members of the audience would like to speak. So probably a good time for that. So would anyone in the audience like to come forward and speak on this issue? I see a hand, and I see a nod. Okay, a hand and a nod. You're first. Your hand was quicker than her nod.
Okay.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. For those of you that don't know, my name's Perry Eskridge. I live at 6082 Church Road here in Ferndale. I'm a Ferndale resident. I went around and talked to some neighbors today because not a lot of people were aware that this was going to be on the agenda tonight, maybe up for discussion, and a lot of them were absolutely surprised that there wasn't a residency requirement. When I asked them what they thought about people outside of Ferndale being able to, be on the Planning Commission and make decisions regarding the future of our city, it was a resounding no. And the reason that most people gave was threefold, and I agree with most of them. City taxpayers, we pay for a lot of services in town. And, you know, when we're talking about decisions that impact the ability of the city to provide services to the community, infrastructure to the community, we want to make sure the people that are making those decisions or the foundation of those decisions are people that actually have a vested interest, a vested financial interest in the city where we live. You don't want somebody with pie-in-the-sky dreams going out there making financial commitments, which then we, the taxpayers, are supposed to be paying for. Next is expertise in the city. I just met, literally, I think, a rocket scientist who lives in Ferndale. Ferndale's growing. And if you don't think we can't find the expertise in this town, I defy you to explain to me how that could be true. We have builders. We have architects. If we get out into our communities and start talking to our neighbors, you'll be shocked what you find out there. I know I just found out there's an architect that lives about five houses down from me. I could have guessed by his house because it's strange and odd, and I don't really care for it, but nonetheless, he's an architect. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. That diversity is already there. We have the ability to find people, you know, that are versed in these disciplines that we think we might want. All we have to do is go out and meet our neighbors, and you'll be shocked. They're there. They're already there. The last one is this discussion about the UGA. I'll sort of lump these all in together. As we've seen recently, there's a little bit of hostility with regard to planning agencies in Whatcom County. I spend a lot of time in front of the Bellingham Planning Commission and the Whatcom County Planning Commission, and I can tell you, you could not pay me to be on those two boards. The rural element just was passed a couple city county council meetings ago, and I tell you, I think it was 30 seconds before I heard Gene Melius of FutureWise saying they're going to challenge the whole thing once again. When we're making these decisions regarding the UGA, we, you know, sometimes you're in, sometimes you're out. What we thought was going to be the UGA forever, now we've just, you know, was reduced by 50-some percent. The UGA is the foundation for growth in the city, and it goes back to those that if you're going to be making those decisions on where infrastructure is going to be going, where services are going to be provided, you need to make sure you're talking to the people that ultimately are going to be planning for those and not maybe hypothetically planning for those. And that's really something that comes down, you know, and hits me where I live and work. I love Tim Cornwell. When I heard he was a planning commissioner, I was ecstatic, and I'm just as disappointed to hear that he's leaving. But as much as I would love to have him stay on planning commission, no, he's not a Ferndale resident any longer. And, you know, that's something I would discuss with him. Why is he leaving? I thought he was smarter than that. But if he's going to leave, I guess he has to leave, and those are the consequences. So thank you. Any questions for me? I guess I'll make myself available.
Councilperson Hansen.
She may be a rocket scientist, but mainly she's an astronaut.
Well, whatever. She's much brighter. Well, I'll go out on a limb and say she's brighter than me. I would guess most of the people in the room. That is a good point.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward. Any more?
Let's show that one council member asked Mr. Eskridge to consider a planning commission post. It's not always easy to get the best people.
That's true. But when I found out the post was open, I actually went out and started recruiting for people.
Good.
And I'd be happy to do that again if I can't apply this time. The decision not lies so much with me as it does my wife. So if you want to recruit me, recruit her.
Put her on the plane.
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. You've got problems.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks, Gary. We have someone else. Welcome, welcome.
Good evening, Council. I'm Yvonne Goldsmith, and I live at 5840 Church Road. And I would ask that we not let the fox into the hen house. That's how I look at it. When you take a look at, I mean, we in Ferndale, we take care of our own. And it's been evident, like when our lower part of the city flooded, this huge community came together, raised money, and helped those people. During Christmas time, we have this store over here that helps people. And we are our own community. And just because there's other cities and towns that are doing it that way, why do we have to jump in and do it? We're Ferndale. We're a great little community. And we take care of our own. I'm sorry Tim's leaving because he was a bonus. It was great to have him. But the minute I heard that, I went out and tried to recruit Perry. Okay? And now I am busy recruiting because I have some new neighbors, and I'm looking. And I think that if we took time to do that and look within our own, what makes it a better candidate or a better person outside of the city limits? Is that a guarantee? Man, I just think Ferndale has got the best. We've got the best in employees, and I've said that before. You do a nice job of hiring, and they serve very well. We have the best sitting here on this council. You guys went out, you did campaigns, you doorbelled, you talked to people, convinced them to vote for you because you represent Ferndale. What are you going to do with a UGA or somebody outside of the city limits who really doesn't have the investment that we have as citizens of the city of Ferndale? So I'd ask you to really consider, don't do this. keep it within Ferndale, and then put it back in our laps on the Planning Commission. Enough of us know hundreds of people. And if we don't have time to get it done, well, then we need to have a little prodding maybe. But there are plenty of good candidates out there that live in Ferndale. And I'd ask that we keep it the way it is. And that we do get an ordinance or, you know, going that we're going to protect those seats in that commission. And I'm asking to keep it in the confines of this great little city called Ferndale.
Okay. Thank you. Councilor Goodrich.
I have a question for Yvonne. Yvonne, don't run away. I was looking over this list that Mr. Taylor gave us, and one of the cities has a thing on here that you have to be a resident for 2 years prior to being on the commission. Do you think there should be any time limit, you know, as far as residency before a person comes on?
You know what? The minute you buy your house here, you've paid taxes into the coffers of the city of Ferndale. That's how I look at it. The minute you have an address here in the city of Ferndale, you are a part of that whole entity of Ferndale. 2 years, I think, is a long time. It's kind of like moving up to Alaska. If you survive two winters, the dark and everything, you're no longer called a Chechako. I hated that. I'm an Alaskan when I lived there because I adopted that as my home, right? Now I'm a Ferndale girl, and I really like it. I'd really like to see us keep it. Ferndale.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else in the audience would like to come in on this? Anyone else? Okay, so I'm going to try to kind of dial it down here. The one is that we seem to have some direction is no change at all, which would still allow us to make the choice of who we have because we've learned there isn't a regulation. Or so how many would like to we'll start out with how many would like to change what we have. Then we'll go to the suggestions of giving staff a direction what to change. Does that sound logical?
We can ask who was responsible to keep it the same.
Yeah.
So votes for no change.
Yeah. All right. So.
But by voting for that, are you indicating broad flexibility or are you indicating we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing, which is always going to be the first job? I think that's a difficult. What are we saying by that vote? Are we saying we want huge flexibility? We want.
Well, at least it would get a direction is. Because if not enough people want to change anything, then we've got to stop what we're doing.
Then it's implied that you could always bring someone from wherever
right, yeah.
by not changing.
You're assuming that you can live within the historical realities and existing ambiguities of the existing ordinance.
My clerk is harassing me going, let someone make a motion. I go, well, yeah, but I'm afraid we're going to have like five different motions. So I'm trying to dial this down a little bit.
Okay.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I'll make the motion. I'll make a motion that five of the seven Planning Commission members must be residents of the city of Ferndale, and that we would prefer that the other two be residents of the city of Ferndale.
And no parameters on if they're not?
And if they're not, they need to be in the Ferndale School District.
Okay. I have a motion. Motion. No discussion until I get a second. Put your hand down. Okay, I don't have a
second. I'll second it just because I.
Okay, I have a motion and a second.
I'm still trying to find something here that may pertain to that.
So. Okay, our planning director, you had your hand up. Now you can make a comment.
No, I think that Greg answered, but my question was basically just going to be if there was a majority in agreement, does the conversation end? Even if there was going to be possibly a unanimous on another one, you know, are we getting to the first one that gets majority, or are we getting to the one that everybody likes?
Well, we have a motion, so do things. We make motions, they get seconded, and we vote. Welcome to the democratic process. as confusing as it may be. Yes, city administrator.
It might be worthwhile or illustrative if we were to just have raised hands, who wants to just keep it the way
are
it
you,
is?
We're discussing the motion right now. You're out of order.
Okay.
My parliamentarian is nodding.
must keep the discussion to the motion that's on the floor.
Yeah, that's true. Sam's kicking me underneath the table. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Speaking to the motion, knowing what the school district is, how far out it goes, almost all the way to Linden, because I have some friends that live out there, I think that's stretching a little bit. I would not support it.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
I just seconded it so we could have a little bit of discussion and I could find what I'm looking for, and what I'm looking for doesn't apply to this, so I will not be supporting this.
Thank you for the question.
Okay. Well, the chair recognizes that as a... We haven't had that one before. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have the... Does everyone understand the motion before you? Because we're going to vote on that. That's what's before us. Everyone understand that? We need to restate it. It's pretty clear. Okay, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'm sorry. I'm confused.
You want to retract that?
Yes, I'll retract that.
Take your spill.
You know, your wife is wondering really what's going on.
Yeah.
Who's on the medication? She come? 3 years.
You're making a nervous.
Okay, so we have one. All opposed.
Aye.
Okay, so that motion fails 4-1. Now, City Administrator, you have a solution for this morass that we're in?
Because there's combinations and permutations here, I thought it might be useful to find out if there's even an appetite for a change before we start having motions and seconds on varying, manifestations of change. So I guess just to find out if a majority of you are comfortable leaving it the way it is, then we can simply move on. If not, then we could actually maybe come back with a fill-in-the-blank, 2 members, 1 member, 7 members, and school district, UGA, zip code, city limits. And
well, but remembering that not having a change really doesn't answer the question, because right now if you don't vote for any kind of change and we leave it the way it is,
mm-hmm.
then someone could come forward from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's correct. Is
right.
Someone could come from China right now.
Exactly.
So that's not.
I don't know if that's a bad thing.
Okay.
Conceptually, if you're comfortable with that concept,
clarify where you're going with that.
Right. This is just directly.
Right,
we'll come back next time with an ordinance.
Staff,
should
but
you
we
want
like to. We'd like a somewhat definite right. direction right. for staff.
But I would only assume that since we've operated for who knows how long with the current rules, that we have been able to find not only adequate number of people, but adequate number of people that historically have lived within the city limits. So it doesn't seem to have been a problem. And as it was pointed out, if a qualified person moves out of the city limits, currently there's nothing keeping them from staying on
correct.
Counts on
but
the
I would debate that everyone, including members of the Planning Commission, had the assumption
right.
that there was legal language that said you must be a citizen. I think
exactly.
that's the whole crux of why we're here, is
right.
we assume, oh, that's not a rule in the first place. So I'm going to go with Councilperson Mutchler, Olson, then Hansen. Did you have your hand?
I'm going to withdraw my comments.
Okay. Councilperson Olson, then Hansen.
After hearing the public testimony, I think I'm going to be swayed back to it's going to have to be city residents. I don't think we've had had a problem in the past, my prior 4 years, almost a year here. I don't think we've had a problem with getting city residents, and I don't see why we should really change that until we have a problem locating it to the people that don't live within the city. So I'm more would stay with got to be a city residents that have a vested interest by living here and paying taxes here and supporting the things that we're all eventually going to have to pay for.
So you could have you could okay. make a motion. You could make a motion that we require them to be city residents unless there were no applicants, and then the mayor would have the alternative to go outside whatever parameters you decide.
That's my motion. Only I'm going to use it as the UGA.
Okay. So
apparently everything else that we've come up with wouldn't help Mr. What's-His-Name anyway, so.
I'm going to second that motion.
Okay, so discussion on that motion.
Repeat the motion.
So the motion would be is that we are, you know, because we're not voting on this action yet, we're directing the planning director, community development director, to make and form a motion with the clerk of that the applicants are city residents unless there are no suitable applicants come forward, then the mayor could go outside the parameters and enter into the UGA parameters.
Correct.
That's probably a more concise way of saying that. Councilperson Mutchler, Goodrich.
So I have a clarifying question. So suitable being, and I appreciate the direction that Councilmember Olson is going on this, because it really is the intent of what I wanted anyway. So, Mayor, if only you have one opening, hypothetically, which you could hear in a month, and a person from inside the city, one person applied, but he or she was not suitable to you, does this ordinance allow you to say this is not a person I want and I don't have anybody else? And that's, I'm kind of asking
that's
what you
meant. Question.
So you could have one person, but he or she would not be suitable in your mind. And I would like to see the ordinance give you the flexibility to say, I have not found a suitable person in the city limits as the executive of the city. And I don't know if that's what you're intending, but I would.
It wasn't, because I go back to somebody like him might not be sitting there forever.
Yeah.
And that's, I know how that, those of you who haven't lived under the prior regime, before we had regime change, will never know what we're, understand what we went through. So that's, I'm always going back to those times to prepare for the worst that may eventually happen again at some point. So I would say that would be okay, but it should be, the council should decide whether it's not suitable, and not one person, but seven.
So you could make an amendment, you could add an amendment to Councilperson Olson's motion.
I want to make sure I got what Keith just said. So you still want, let's say there's one opening and one application. You don't want to give the mayor the ability to reject that person. That person has to come to council.
Yes.
Okay. And I would.
Council can reject.
And I would rather see I think the mayor should have the ability to reject that person. That's kind of my view.
Okay, so we're still in kind of open discussion period.
Could I amend my own motion to include?
Only by an actual amendment motion.
You can move to amend.
Okay, I'll move to amend my motion to add that if the suitability of that candidate is determined by the council.
Got a second?
And I would second that.
Okay, second it. Okay, so discussion, we have to, we're just on discussion of the amendment. So, but I still had people in line. Would you like to discuss the amendment?
Just a point of information. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If by what we do tonight, will we create an unsuitable candidate in Mr. Cornwell?
No.
On none of these, on his the parameters of what he suggested, because he's suggesting UGA. So.
Right. So that would be okay. So,
but Commissioner Cornwell would not be eligible because he's outside the UGA.
Oh, he's outside the UGA. Okay, so if we did nothing, as Mel said, okay, I see what you're saying. Thank you. That answers my question.
And then, Councilor Goodrich, you had your hand up.
It was on the original motion.
Okay, so.
Just to clarify, with this change, you would actually, you'd make your own list because you'd be the only council in the state that actually requires the mayor to bring you someone. Generally, planning commission nominees are mayor's nominees. So I just good thought. It's kind of a it's we've the, kind of changed the process.
The question
a little bit.
Of who determines suitability that we're trying to address.
Yeah. I understand the wrinkle. It's kind of odd, just because I've never heard of a. Basically, you're almost removing it from the mayor's hands of the.
As
the
legislative body, we wouldn't want to have that responsibility.
Not necessarily. He could bring forth that person and say why he's not happy with that person, and then we would determine. He still gets to have a say in it. It's just whether or not that person, that the reasoning is agreed to by seven people.
Councilor Hansen, then Administrator Young.
It takes the monkey off the mayor's back somewhat in the respect that if there is a person and the mayor's not particularly comfortable with that person, he can so indicate to us that he was disappointed that there wasn't a more qualified, and the council can either accept or reject.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with that language. It still puts us back to the position that we're going to go out and advertise. We're going to seek in-city members. The Planning Commission is going to help recruit those in-city members. There's lots of qualified people that live inside the city. I just don't see us not having a choice at some point. I can name people. Everyone can name people they'd rather not have on the Planning Commission, and I think this is a limiting factor that gives the mayor the ability to reject through the entire council. But it takes the monkey off the mayor's back.
Sure. Okay. Mr. Young?
Yeah, I was going to say that the way the conversation is going, I think practically might work well, because if there was an opening, we would actively advertise and solicit within the city. Then if someone came forward or no one came forward and the council decided that someone was unsuitable or literally there was no one, the council could then say, oh, now we take the next step, let's advertise out to the UGA. So it actually has a two-step process built into it, which is, I think, your preference, because you want to first try to reach within the city. If not, we go out to the UGA. Now, this would set up a process.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? I have a motion and a second on the floor.
Can we have it read back, please?
Sure.
The current motion on the floor is that Councilmember Olson moved to amend to add the words, if the suitability of a candidate is determined by the council.
So we vote on...
You need to vote on that amendment. If it passes, then
how does that change the original amendment? I apologize for it. It's been a little bit long.
If it changes, that would change the
original amendment. It defines suitability.
Yes.
Right. It determines who determines suitability. Mayor versus council, mm-hmm. And the amendment says that the council decides suitability.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes 4-1. On the main motion, I think everyone understands that. Any questions? No. No further discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0. Okay, moving on. Staff has some direction. That's a non-binding vote. We have a direction to go to bring forward next meeting. Okay, let's see now.
Looks like one item left, man.
Well, no, there's still some. Okay, water, sewer, storm utility rate study discussion.
That's not on my agenda.
Really?
It might be. Okay.
Discussion, water, sewer, storm, utility rate study philosophy? That missed your agenda?
It was D originally.
It just moved order.
D is no longer
on. Rick, so. We passed your franchise in. But not that you're totally enjoying yourself.
Thank you.
Our finance director, Mr. Peterson.
Good evening, council, citizens. I passed out a one-page kind of issues or discussion points on water, sewer, storm rate study. We intend to do that rate study this fall. I have a couple extra copies in front here for citizens. This is not an exhaustive list, just five items listed, but just for food for thought as we go forward this fall. Public Works Director has been asking for a fourth plant operator for several years now. One way to finance that, if council so desires, would be a one-time 2% rate increase for both water and sewer. That'd be in addition to the cost of living, the annual cost of living increase. That would finance a fourth operator. Other ways would be for the outside city limits surcharge for water sewer to increase that from 1.5 to 1.75, or actually 2, as we do with storm rates. Outside city limits, storm customers pay 2 times inside city rates. Those are a couple of ideas. If one was, council was convinced that we need a fourth operator, we've got about 4,200 water customers. We grow about 2 to 3% each year. So that's about 80, 90 customers each year. The second item, debt service coverage ratios, we'll be going over this in some detail. But kind of the bottom line is sewer is not meeting its coverage ratios that we set in our financial policies. But water is meeting those debt service coverage ratios with rates. So a suggestion would be to lower water and increase sewer by a commensurate amount. So the typical homeowner, the total bill wouldn't change. We'll be laying on more rate revenue on sewer and less rate revenue on water. That would help us to get to where we want to be on debt service coverage ratios. Thirdly, review cash reserves. Many of our, all of our revenue bonds for water sewer have already a requirement to set aside money for a one-year average debt service payment. We also have one loan, one sewer loan with the state that has reserve requirements. But there are other loans for water, sewer, storm, where we currently don't have a one-year debt service reserve, and I'd like to see that implemented. And then there's always the review of connection revenue versus rate revenue and how you use both of those revenue streams. As you recall, rate revenue is intended to pay all debt service. It's intended to cover cost of operations, not only of the plant, but our maintenance crews, and cover all debt service. Right now, rate revenues do not quite meet that obligation. We have to grab some of those connection revenues. So we'll have that discussion. Lastly, in detail coming up on us, there's a $2 per month storm rate increase scheduled for January of 2013. Now, we don't need all that $2 a month because we got a $871,000 grant to build the storm pond. So, roughly speaking, we don't need a dollar per month of that. We can drop that. Or, alternatively, take the first dollar per month and use that to pay debt service on our storm loan. We got a grant and a loan for the pond. And secondly, take that extra dollar and put it in some kind of reserves for the next big capital project. We've got more regional ponds coming upon us in the future. So those are some five talking points, which we'll discuss in some detail this fall. And it's not an exhaustive list. I'm sure some of you have some other ideas that we need to talk about. Firsthand, I think I saw was Councilmember Mutchler.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
And then Hansen.
So number four, if I were to tell a customer, a sewer water sewer customer, that, yeah, your rate is high, but if we were charging you what the real operating and debt service costs were, it would be higher, but your water sewer is subsidized by hookup fees. Is that roughly correct?
That's roughly correct.
Okay. And we can legally do that? Or?
Sure.
Sure. Okay. And if it was approximately how much higher would the water sewer bill be if we were true to form?
And we'll talk about that this
okay.
fall.
Okay.
Don't have an answer tonight.
Okay.
But generally, the water fund is in much better shape, if you will, in terms of debt servicing than the sewer fund. The last year of our large debt service is 2016. That was for the last sewer plant expansion. The 20th year of bonds, it's almost $1 million that year, 2016. But we do have reserves to cover most of that. Again, we're going to be looking at another sewer plant expansion the year
which is kind of open to conjecture at this point. But we will need another infusion of capital money to do that project as we grow, as it's needed. Councilmember Hansen.
Since water, if you add up water and sewer throughout the city, forget stormwater for the moment, yeah, but just water and sewer rates, mm-hmm, most people's water bill is probably about one-third or maybe two-fifths of the sewer bill.
It's not that much.
Is it?
I would say
sewer's definitely
sewer's higher. I would say it's about two-thirds. Two-thirds of water bill, two-thirds of sewer. Sewer is more expensive, no doubt, for a typical homeowner.
Here's my point. A 2%, a 3% decrease in water and a 3% increase in sewer will create more revenue.
We will make it revenue neutral. The proposal would be revenue neutral, probably a 2%.
Strictly my question.
Yeah. So we'll make the bill the same.
Councilperson Goodrich had a question.
Well, that's one of my thing is I'm very kind of against anything that would cause our water bills and stuff to go up. I know we have a lot of unhappy customers out there. Seems like you can see emails and stuff because of the new hard water and other issues, and the rates have gone up. And the talk about doing a rate increase again, I have a hard time justifying that. To the citizens that are
for the fourth operator,
right now.
For example, for the fourth operator.
Yeah.
It's about $100,000 wages and benefits per year, yeah.
I know we need it, but I'd have a hard time going to the people and saying, hey, let's raise your rates again to pay for another thing when they're unhappy as it is.
Councilperson Olson?
I have to concur with Brent on the fourth plant operator. I wouldn't have any problem for outside our city limits. As far as rate increases and water, though, with the problems we're having with the hard water and the emails we're all getting, it'd be hard to sell that one. Stormwater, again, there's one that just keep increasing. What are we getting for that? I don't. Other than we bought a pond that I voted was way too big, we might not need it because construction in that southwest corner. Northwest corner of Church of Maine that's supposed to help pay for this thing didn't happen, and now we're stuck paying for that pond all by ourselves. Well, we got a grant.
Yeah, we got grants and loan. Grants was $871,000. Way to go, Janice. Wendy.
And we don't help ourselves by increasing the stormwater when we are putting out flyers that say, washing your car at home is a dirty business. Oil, brake pad, tire dust, and other chemical residue build up along with soap, wash straight down the storm drain and flow untreated into nearby streams, rivers, and Puget Sound. That's not true. That is for some neighborhoods, but a majority of that sewer water goes into the sewer system and is treated. Isn't that correct?
Goes into the stormwater system. Doesn't go into the sewer.
Okay, when I'm washing my car, I live in Westerland off of Malloy, and it goes into the sewer. Where does that sewer water travel?
Going into the sanitary sewer or the storm sewer?
You're washing on your driveway? In the street, wherever.
Okay.
There are drains right there in the street.
There's always the confusion. It always drives me crazy. It's a storm water system. And when people start calling it a storm sewer system, people get confused.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not a storm sewer system. It's a storm water system.
So the drains in the street
go to hopefully
a retention
pond. If it's an older system, it may flow right to the NUPSAC.
Or a contractor.
Yeah. So 94 probably made pond.
Keith makes a good point. What we're saying is that all of the car washing in the city goes to the river, and that's not true directly. It goes into a treatment pond for the vast majority now of our citizens, as opposed to directly to the river. or at least...
I don't know if I'd say vast majority.
All right.
No.
There's a percentage that does not go into the stormwater system. Every time you touch that stormwater system, though, the NPDES permit requires you to upgrade. So we don't touch the storm system without upgrading it so that water goes to a point. You can't. They're not going to let you get away with dumping directly into the river. They won't.
Even though we are in several cases.
We are in several cases, but the minute you upgrade that system.
Correct.
They're going to require something else.
But I don't know if we've ever totaled to update this whole city system at this point it would probably throw you off all your chairs if you totaled that.
I agree with Keith. If we need the dollar for debt service for the pond, we take the dollar. We don't take the other dollar, assuming we need it down the road. If we need it down the road, then the council votes to add that dollar at that time.
Okay. So this is discussions for the future. Yes. So keep right. that in your thinking cap.
Thank you. One more question.
We had discussed in committee one time about the potential reimbursement from the PUD-1. That money could be used for that fourth operator, and so we haven't got the money back. Is it not looking so great?
We're still working on it.
Still working.
It's still outstanding.
We were thinking it could be as much as $600,000 at one time.
Yeah, if it was of that size, you're right. That could be an endowment for probably 5 or 6 years. Then you need to replace that endowment. Well, thank you. These are issues. I'm going to hit them hard this fall.
Okay, might as well stay right up there because you're next on the agenda. Yeah. Discussion city financial management policy.
I'd like to discuss just a few pages with my notes. So this is a little different than your packet, but packet, of course, is unedited. Thank you. But first, let me just kind of go through a little background on these financial management policies. We put these in place in 2005. They've been sitting there all this time. Shortly after our city administrator came in, we put these in place. I think he borrowed them from some other city manager, something close. So they've been there, and we've been, to the best of our ability, trying to follow all these points. Not always 100% successful. But there were a few questions today from council member. I may as well kind of run by, and council member Mutchell had some questions. And I agree that my hieroglyphics were a little bit hard to read. there was a mention in page 6 of your handout. Now, I do have that on that annotated handout. Page 6 talked about some examples of expenditures that delay future costs. And maybe just a comment on that. Some examples are in the water sewer utility, storm utility, we have outsourced certain functions of that billing process and collection process. We've outsourced the mail, stuffing, mailing, and delivering of those invoices every 2 months. We've also outsourced the collection of money. The vast majority of our water sewer payments go to a lockbox in Seattle. Those are examples of delaying hiring more employees and using the market as a very cost-efficient vehicle for doing these selected functions. Another example would be perhaps to have an ongoing road maintenance, an overlay program, versus letting that road deteriorate to the point years later where you have to replace the entire roadbed. So those are examples of spending some money earlier to avoid much higher costs later. And we know that when we, back to that first point, city employees are rather costly. We can outsource, get efficient costing outside for certain functions. We have done that. There was a comment about overhead and full cost allocation. An example of violating that would be not allocating central services costs to streets and water, sewer, storm. Central service costs includes yours and my salary, attorneys, liability, fire insurance, all kinds of central kind of costs that we do allocate based on headcount to the water, sewer, storm, and streets, wherever employees reside, charge their time. Another example would be our fee code says that an engineer's time for the city is worth $125 an hour. A typical public works person is worth $100 an hour. Well, that includes an allocation of central service costs and vehicle maintenance and vehicle purchases and that sort of thing. So if we were charged $50 instead of $100, we'd be undercharging, if you will, those entities that use that service. So those are examples of full cost allocation. And there's some question about unreserved fund balance and general fund contingency reserve. As you read those definitions, they're pretty similar. They're pretty similar. Right now, our general fund contingency reserve has a total of about $4,000 in it because it's rainy day fund and it has been raining. So we've used those funds down to council approved, of course, down to just a minimum. Whereas the working capital reserve, the dollars in the general fund is right around $1 million. And it's defined as 10% of annual revenues as the general reserve and then 10% for the general fund contingency. The third type of reserve is the facilities capital reserve, which is the flat $300,000. All those we need to review. And I haven't got specific notes on those, but we need to review those. And one thing that we have to be cautious of, if let's say we decide we need more reserve dollars in the general fund, that 10% of revenues, which is 5 weeks worth of, if you will, expenditures. Revenues and expenditures these days are very close to one another. 5 weeks, that doesn't seem like enough. So let's say we want to do 10 weeks. Well, if we say 10 weeks, we're immediately out of compliance with our reserve policy. And then when we go out for general obligation bonds, perhaps a library bond, the bond rating agencies will say, well, what are your reserve policies? Well, here they are. They're on our website. We are not even close to those. So if we decide to increase those reserves, probably want to phase those in over some years. Maybe, you know, by 2018, we'd like to get to this higher level, for example.
Does that reserve include our left one obligation?
No, we changed the title, with your approval, of the left one fund from a reserve to just a retired police officer fund. We expend money every month in that fund. We're paying not only the insurance premiums, but the out-of-pocket medical and limited dental costs for those three retired police officers. So we don't call that fund a reserve, but we know that the state actuary formula says we should have about $800,000 in that account. And we only have about $250,000 right now. My own calculations are more like $3 to $6 million, but that's just me. So there's a lot of different things here to look at as we go through this fall. Look at these policies. And
so, Mr. Peterson.
Yeah.
So the unreserved fund, what would that fund be used for then? Is it for general fund usage if you need it?
Yeah, it's just fluctuations month to month in expenditures. For example,
so I'm not quite sure the difference between the general fund contingency reserve. Yeah. It's subtle, or am I? Is it
well,
more apparent?
An example of just the working capital reserve, it's really just what is your balance in your general fund? We're carrying about $1 million. We have to pay in January of every year our insurance bill, our liability and fire insurance bills, over $300,000 a year. It hits us in January. So that's an example of kind of a higher cost payment that really, you know, we need some working capital to be able to pay that. So that balance draws down in January. Other big payments like fire district typically are coincident with property tax collections twice a year. So those two are kind of coincident. That helps.
I guess I'd add, too, that some cities, especially large cities, their accounting systems are more complicated than ours just by statute. They have to be. And for those large cities, when you have an ending fund balance, many times that ending fund balance is broken into reserved ending fund balance and unreserved fund balance. So you might have some of these contingent liabilities, so you reserve part of your ending fund balance knowing you're going to be spending it in the future. So the term unreserved fund balance is an accounting term to mean cash that is truly sitting on the table. It's extra. It could be reserves. You could do anything you want with it. But it's just
when an example would be like a sudden spike in health insurance in the middle of the year, that would come out of the unreserved because it's
yeah. If we had unforeseen expenditures and we did a budget amendment and had no extra revenue coming in, by default that money those expenditures would be provided for through the unreserved cash balance.
And the general fund contingency are the we know they're going to come, the fire department.
Right.
It's
almost like we know there's going to be a problem, so let's put a little money in reserves. It's those known, it's almost a Rumsfeld thing.
Right.
The known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. The known unknowns are in your reserve fund. The unknown unknowns, you would then look to your unreserved fund balance.
Exactly.
It's technical, but in the bottom line is it's money that's left over. So what do you want to call it?
Thanks.
They used to call it unks. Another question on page 12 in your packet was a definition that talked about 15-year versus 20 years of debt service. And 15 years is typically what we use for assessment debt. We only have one active assessment debt outstanding right now. That's the Labounty Road assessment, which typically they're 15 years. Banks typically will loan or issue a bond 15 years. It's meant to make sure that the value of the asset will be there in 15 years. And typically, general obligation bonds or even revenue bonds for water, sewer, storm traditionally been 20 years, although we did some 14-year general obligation bonds last year. Just because that was the market, what would sell. So that kind of goes there. So we only have one 15-year assessment bond, and that's the Labounty Road, where the property owners are supposed to pay all that.
Okay. That was the LID.
Local Improvement District. We went up paying some ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of highlights some of those questions, but let's go right to your short handout tonight. One that has just some of my notes on it. Let's go to page 6, which is really the first page in, talking about reserve and contingency policies. We've talked about the 10% of current expense fund, 52 weeks a year. That gets you 5 weeks of working capital. That's a little skinny in my view. I think we should try to increase that and probably phase it. We don't get bit by if we go out for general obligation bonds and get a lower rating. 300,000 facilities capital reserve, that's just open to conjecture whether that should be a little higher or not. That's nice to have that money. And for example, we're using some of that if we find a piece of property that will benefit us on the 6-year street tip plan. For example, at Washington Vista, that house that we acquired, that
have 2 years of small payments on it, but you know, that plays into the that intersection in the future. And I think we need to add at the bottom of page six, which is your first page in, we do need to, I strongly believe, we need to add some debt service funds, at least a minimum of 1 year debt service for all of our debt. We have it for much of our debt already, much of our water, sewer, storm revenue debt, but we don't have it on our general obligation bonds. I think it's a wise thing to have that year of cushion there. Councilmember Zimmerman.
Had we had that in place before we got the bonds, would it give us a stronger position or a lower interest rate? Or I mean, it seems odd that now we're worrying about it after we're already on the
schedule. Well, I'm a worrier. I worry before and after. It would have helped. The more cash we have, certainly bond agencies love that. They go, well, actually, why do you need the money? If you have the more cash reserves you have, they love that. You know, they think that's great.
I mean, the more cash reserves, they're not going to come back and give us a lower rate after the fact.
No, they're not.
I mean, this is something we should.
The write-up looks better to
answer my question.
Market the bonds.
How much are we talking about? We looking at if we did this for the general obligation.
Well, substantial monies. You know, we've got police station.
$600,000 a year, so.
You know, we got substantial money, and we couldn't do it in 1 year. It would be one of these let's best efforts or target by a certain year. And the only way we'd get it that, let's say, by 2018, so we had some new source of major sales tax revenue. That's the only thing I can think of that we'd get the money to be able to sock that away. And I've got a handout in a few minutes that talks about that. How we would use if we had a flood of sales tax money from major new retail. And then the next page worth discussing, page 22 of your, it's just the second page in of this handout with my notes. Again, debt service funds, we should have at least 1 year debt service for all of our debt. Most of it, we have it, most of it for water, sewer, storm, but not all of our loans and bonds. And some of the language in here talks about putting money away each year, a certain percent, toward the target, and I would suggest we kind of soften that wording a little bit, you know, best efforts or as feasible, those kind of mealy-mouthed weasel words. And page 23 says, if possible, on the top of 23. And then the debt service targets at the bottom of page 23 talks about a minimum of 1.25, in other words, we have enough revenue. We have 1.25 revenue, 125,000 revenue for 100,000 worth of debt. That's a minimum kind of a thing, and we would like to, I'd like to suggest we do that for all of our debt, not just revenue bonds. So that's kind of the highlights of this. I don't want to put you to sleep too much longer. We'll be talking about this in more detail in the near future. I would like to hand out another item. This just talks about possible uses of excess sales tax from major retailers. And we kind of want to, should be coming around the other way. Just kind of thoughts here about if we were to be so fortunate, or however you look at it, if we got some major new retail in town. We've got, I think, a lot of needs, and a lot of it is filling up reserves. And like our equipment fund, we would want to sock away some of that extra money for vehicles. We have nothing in reserve for purchasing vehicles. We got one mechanic in that fund. And then the general fund reserves we just talked about, those are pretty much depleted except for working capital. And debt service funds, one year debt service reserves. And there's that left one, police retiree fund. We have three retired police officers. We're obligated to pay all their health insurance and all their housing costs, if you will, until they don't need it any longer. We got $250,000 in there now. We're paying out, paying as you go.
our payments are around 40 grand a year, and we're feeding it with the solid waste tax money. But that is an obligation. If we were a full accrual accounting GAAP entity, we'd have to put that on our liability on our balance sheet, and that'd be real tough. New library debt service sinking fund, pre-funding the debt service, that's another possible use if we get some excess sales tax. I think the top priority for council last retreat was to add police officers. Other staff is needed, parks department, new parks. I know you're always looking at our parks plan, and, you know, we're using almost every dollar of park mitigation funds just to pay the 20-year debt service on our two major new recent parks, the Centennial Riverwalk and Griffintown. We've got 18 years left on the Riverwalk. 1% interest, great interest from Whatcom County. They're pretty much obligating that park mitigation is depending on housing. You know, commercial does not pay any parks mitigation. And, street sidewalk rehab funds, we did that 1 or 2 years, and then the funds kind of dried up. And sure like to see that come back. And always a chance to pay off any high-interest debt where we can. Usually these bonds say the first 10 years you cannot retire those, but years 11 through 20 you can generally. So those are just some ideas. If we were to fall into some major sales tax.
Mark, when you, the very last thing, to pay off high interest general obligation bond, what, you know, like refinancing your house, what, you talk about paying points up front to get us a better interest rate or a short period of time or
these would be existing debt we have, typically a 20-year general obligation bond.
They don't just want to rewrite it. They want a chunk of change to pay points or something like that.
No, it's not that. It's we can just pay off certain bondholders.
Yeah.
Let's say a little old lady or a pension fund has $500,000 worth of our bonds, and they're mature in 2022. We could, if we're allowed to, we could pay it off. And bonds, if you will, they're stair-stepped, they're laddered. They start out with a small, like, 2.5% interest. It ladders out to almost 6% in year 20. So you want to pick off those higher interest bonds when you could if we had the excess cash.
Yeah, the term is calling the bonds. So some people, if you have a bond and it doesn't come due until 2025, you just get interest payments every year. Until 2025, then you get your $5,000, your $10,000, your $50,000, whatever it is,
like
your
balloon.
Well, what happens is if the bond is callable, many years before when you get your bulk of your money back, we say, we're going to give it back to you now. That means you lose all those interest payments in those future years. But we can actually call the bonds and say we have $300,000, $500,000 worth of bonds outstanding. We can call the bonds and say, here's $300,000, or here's $500,000. Your debt is extinguished.
I mean, to me, that how it's set up in the get-go. You know, if you set up yourself on a loan with your prepayment penalties, it sounds like this is what you got going. Then it throws it all out the window. So
yeah, most bonds, the first 10 years, like I said, first 10 years you can't call because people want that interest every year. It'd be so hard to sell those first 10 years of bonds if it was callable.
We didn't have it. We were interest free for a year.
Because you can do a refunding. When we did that with our water sewer bonds, where we simply took the old debt and gave new debt at lower interest rates, this is not replacing new debt, new lower interest rate debt for old debt. It's simply paying off. It's like paying off your house early.
Exactly.
Pay off the underlying mortgage.
Exactly.
Debt to the city, yeah. And, you know, the interest rate we're getting on excess cash is so abysmal, it's like 0.16% annual interest. You know, so if we had the cash, we'd certainly be better off by paying off some of those higher interest term bonds out there. So that's all I've got, just food for thought. Not that it's an immediate thing, but we should be thinking about what we would do if we had a kind of a new source of sales tax. Thank you.
Okay, next. Next on the agenda is discussion of the private nonprofit annual allocation philosophy. So this was brought forward in committee, so this is not a mayor-directed thing. This is a council-directed thing. Councilperson Mutchler, do you want to start this discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Peterson made it very easy for me. He's just indicated to us that we are significantly underfunded in probably we can name six to seven different areas. And I'd like to see a process whereby we are a little more, what's the word I want to look for here? Just
stringent.
Stringent?
Thank you.
On these things that come to us. What's that, Mr.
Deliberative?
Cutting to the chase, I think these are all worthy, wonderful things that we support every year. But they sort of get supported automatically. And at the end of the day, we've made some recommendations, I think, previously in committee, was that all these groups need to not expect that it's a year-by-year, keeps happening. They're all sunsetted after a year. And that they need to apply to us and that they need to show us a balance statement and what their sources of funding on. And probably the bottom line is I think they all need an up or down vote individually from council. Maybe there will be a day when we've got lots of extra money, but we've just heard that we don't. And I think we should be funding the things that we are required to do before we do these other things. Pretty simple.
So it is, and I understand where council is going. I immediately had a call to come talk to the senior center, so I spent 2 hours talking to them. It's a stressful time for them to fill out the application, but they will do that and they will go forward. But again, it's to sit there and look at a list and decide a senior center or a food bank. I don't know how you decide between. And so my fear is where I've looked at from experience. Is that people want to appear benevolent, I guess, so that we decide on a pie, and then we just divide up the pie. Okay, here, you get this, you get it. So we divide up those slices, and so, you know, like the senior center group, you know, they obviously they came forward last year with a larger contribution, and we said, no, you can't have that. And you know, at a certain point where, you know, you lower that amount too much, you might as well not do anything. But, so that's just my fear is that I don't want you to look at a pie and say, okay, well, let's now we have 10 people on this list, just divide up the pie and everybody gets a tenth of the pie when you might not do. So you're going to have some tough decisions, and some of those are highly subjective decisions. If you decide not to fund any of them, I would disagree with that. Some of those are still a function of a city. Not everything we do in a city just is basically part of this. So, I applaud you for your efforts, but don't think those will be easy decisions.
No, they're going to be tough, but I just need to know that they really need it. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. And I think that it's fair that council kind of sees their sources of funding and look at them fairly. Nobody's saying no, but I think they need to be looked at in light of the fact that we're not funding things that we're really supposed to be funding. Retired police officers. We were just told, Mr. Peterson, our city treasurer, said we should probably have between $3 and $6 million in that fund, and we've got $250,000. State says we need $800,000. You know, got to find it somewhere.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I can see some of the logic in this, just because we do get hit up come budget time. It seems like a lot of people come knocking on the door. Some of our own boards and commissions in the city are looking, been looking for money and stuff. Just to grant something because we've always done it, I can see maybe we need to relook at that and look at the list. I'm not kind of opposed to that, what you're proposing. like the mayor says, these are tough decisions, and you know, come budget time, we always have a lot of things to make. And do we need to fund everything or change it or something? You know, could we end up giving more to somebody else? I don't know. You know, the pilot truck stop really pays off, and we get all kinds of extra sales tax from them. Get all those Canadians buying gas here or something. Yeah.
Do we get anything off of that?
What?
Just sales tax on their convenience store.
Yeah. Nothing on the gas.
No. Well, not yet. Penny quarter guests.
Yes. Any other discussion? Councilperson Olson?
I also support John's. I think we should take a look at it also, and take a look and vote up or down on them. It's going to be tough, but we make the tough decisions at budget time every year. But I, as far as the LEF account, as somebody who's very familiar with that, I still have a lot of questions about that. And for example, do they bring us the bill and then we pay them?
As a board that meets and approves each bill from out-of-pocket medical, out-of-pocket dental.
Yeah, there's a LEF board that does that and then sends us the bill.
And who's on this board?
I think it's appointed by the governor, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think it's a governor appointed.
So how? Typically, Keith, it's they have some set parameters, and I think it's like less than 10% approaches what they would consider. You know, if someone comes and says, "Gee, we've paid for this 15 times," no, that's too much. But it's less than 10% ever gets rejected. LEF one is a good deal.
Oh yeah, I missed that one.
Which is a good deal for
the
retirees. For the retirees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How
do we know that they're not? I mean, if they're submitting their bill, and we're paying them, how do we know that they haven't also billed Medicare?
They haven't billed their spousal's insurance. What guarantees?
I see the receipts.
The receipts of the doctor sending them the bill.
Well, that's I don't know. I'm gonna ask.
You think that would be one of the charges of the LEF board, is to be sure they're duplicated.
That's my whole question.
Yeah.
We all thought that city planning commissioners were supposed to be in city.
Sure.
We don't know until I would like to see what is your procedure that shows we're not getting double and triple billed.
Most of the bills are for meds, prescriptions, dental.
Yeah. But still, there might be.
We're only seeing half of it.
No, very good question. I will research that.
Okay. There was only one on Medicare. We pay the appropriate type of Medicare.
Typically, in my experience of seeing this, is that Medicare is billed first, then it was remaining.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Still.
So we pay the out of pocket Part B or whatever they have to pay every month. And that comes in every month. And we pay the AWC's medical insurance plan for these three.
But it certainly is a good question to say, what are your safeguards to?
Make sure that. Yeah. And I would hope nobody's doing that, but you never know.
Not to be completely morbid, but if you talk to every mayor at every conference, you know, because there's not a city that doesn't worry about this. And, it's not a statement they like to make in public, but it's a true statement. It's like, okay, the actuaries can show that, but the ulcer percentage is, okay, what's the percentage are going to pass away before all the benefits are due? Councilperson Mutzler?
I was just curious, Mayor Jensen, I know the newspaper covered this about a month ago when committee talked about it. I haven't heard any feedback. I don't know if you, other than the senior center, I guess, have heard from other groups.
Well, on that note, there's in my line of work that's soon to be ending in 11 days. I can tell you that there are people at the food bank who won't even live in this country. So what are the guarantees that this money that we're giving to them are actually going to city residents, let alone people that even live in the country?
Yeah, the money we give to the food bank is 1/18th of their budget.
Pretty much.
Well, and it's food banks only utilities, correct? We pay the utility bill.
We're not funding
cash
donations.
Cash for
food. Large hemp or hams.
Although they might, they're in their new application, they might ask for more. They were all, I did have several people ask me. I wrote this application. Yeah. There were several people that did inquire as to if they just had to keep asking for the same amount of money, and I said that I wasn't giving any direction. You can put in three applications. It's all up to the council. So you might see new proposals. You might see the same exact proposals. We don't know.
Yeah, and again, I thought so much about the process that I honestly don't know who I would support or not support. I haven't even thought about it. And they're all, I was liaison to the resource center. They're all just a great group. I just think that I think we need, as politicians, need to make the hard decisions and be on record as to what we want to support and fight for the things we think we should and vote against the things we shouldn't. But I think the process is important as stewards of the citizens' money, especially during these tight times. And
Goodrich? One of the things that I was wondering on, too, is things like the Heritage Society or something like that, would that fall under this? Because, like, there are old settlers. Because, or does it fall under parks, like they were talking about wanting to put in walkways in Pioneer Park so people in wheelchairs can make it around through the cabins or new roof on a cabin or something like that where they've come in and asked for funds. Would that fall under this same type of thing? Or?
That brings up a great thing. I'd like to kind of just divert a little bit because some citizens are kind of frustrated in what's happening. The funds that we do have funds that go to Old Settlers and Heritage. That's out of the Hotel Motel Tax Advisory. But like the group today, you know, they were asking me for funds for a park project. And I said, well, you know, let me explain something, because when I brought it forward a couple of months back, you know, people kind of shrugged and said, yeah, okay, but here's the repercussions of it, is that when we reduced our UGA by 56%, we also basically reduced our park impact fee. So if you're building a home today in Ferndale, you're paying less of a park impact fee because it didn't mesh with our comprehensive plan. So we're bringing in less money into parks mitigation, but the stationary bills paying for Riverwalk, Second Avenue, those didn't. That payment stayed the same. So parks mitigation fund is woefully inadequate and thin. Now we're working on updating the comprehensive plan, and you'll see that come before you, and we'll have an open house. But that's, you know, all of a sudden now people are the parks board and you know, these people are, well, what are we here for? You're telling me we don't have any money? No, we don't have any money. Remember I told you a couple of months ago this was the repercussion of lowering the fee. We're going to have less in, and so the money we have is going to go for debt service without much extra. So that's a little sideline. That money, those were Pioneer Park people that were, well, we'd like some money for this. That's great. Here's the fund. It's we lowered the fee. We'll increase the fee. Well, okay, easier said than done. We have to have justification. You know, the builders certainly like a lower fee right now.
To go back to the question about kind of how this program works, these funds are specifically to go towards contractual relationships with outside entities in which basically the city is going to be paying for a service we otherwise would do on our own but aren't for whatever reason, because we feel like if the government did it itself, it couldn't be as affordable. They have the resources already on hand. The food bank, you know, we're not going to go out and buy a bunch of food. They have the ability to leverage every dollar. We give them $3 based on their government contracting, federal government. So this is specifically for entities, whether they're educational, nonprofits, or another governmental entity that can provide a service for the city of Bellingham. We would enter into a contract with them that explicitly spells out the type of service. The application design is designed for them to explain to us what is the service they're going to provide. Can they measure it? You know, I try to get some good parameters in there to say, you know, what are you doing for the city? How is it measurable? What's the timeline? How are you gonna deliver these services? What kind of financials do you currently have? Where, you know, so for the nonprofits, they have to show you their I-9 for the federal government, or excuse me, Form 990s. Lots of federal government.
I-9 would be good, too.
Yeah.
We don't need the 99s. We need the 990s. So, you know, we tried to give you a lot. The goal, basically, what I was told was to give you as much information as possible to help you make an educated decision about each entity.
Yeah. So have we received some applications since?
No. No, not for this grant program.
Well, that makes things easier for us if we receive applications.
Well, their deadline's October 1st, so they've got time. It's new, and it's a lengthy application.
Both the entities I talked to said, thank you for giving us the time. We're not used to this. So the discussion will move forward. Okay, moving on to mayor reports. I had a great meeting with the manager of BP Cherry Point. You've seen a bit in the publicity, but he wanted to kind of tell us what is happening at BP Cherry Point. BP Cherry Point has sold their refinery in California, probably as a major debt reduction based on the disaster in the Louisiana Gulf. And so to pay off part of that, they actually sold the refinery. But part of that refinery held up to 70 to 75 of their management personnel. So they're going to move all that management personnel to Ferndale. So I don't know if real estate has seen a difference, but you have some average wages from 75 a year up to 120 a year. So 70, 75, you know, high-level employees moving, and they all basically, all of them, agreed to move north. They had a fact-finding, toured Ferndale, showed Ferndale, said, well, your choice is move here or nowhere. And so they were unbelievably pleased to have 100% participation. The other side is... Here's your choice. But the other one is they will be submitting permits is for a giant transformation of their railroad capacity. And they hope to basically ship one train load of oil from the North Dakota fields that are just going great guns. If you have young persons looking for jobs, send them to North Dakota if they can find a place to live. Mm-hmm. But then that will basically, if they get permits, that will be a large circular yard. They haven't used much of their rail capacity until now, but they hope to receive one full train load of crude per week, and then that will reduce, so they will bring one less large tanker ship to Puget Sound and replaced by the rail, and then they'll see how that goes and maybe increase it more. So I know we had the meeting last week about rail and everybody's concerned. Well, if you heard me say, well, even if coal doesn't happen, rail is going to increase. So, but I guess the good point is that they are nearing completion. They think there's another 9 months to have completion of their $400 million retrofit to create cleaner diesel. So BP Cherry Point is on a hiring run. This will put them, he thinks, one or two employees under 1,000 employees on site. So,
and what are they now? 600?
Go 997 minus 75.
10 minutes.
So because they've hired some extra staff and everything. Right now they're well over that because they have temporary crew on site. They're still doing the $400 million construction. So both our plants are doing well. So obviously Street Festival, we know fun times in Ferndale this Saturday, so all of you should come by and have a hot dog or feel guilty about not having a hot dog.
Absolutely.
And the mayor has surgery tomorrow, so I don't know when I'll be back and have my Achilles tendon sewed back together, so we'll see how I can limp along. Other than that,
was that the result of the walk across the
Yeah, and then I aggravated it trying to climb a mountain. So I'm a baby boomer refusing to grow old.
Mr. Mayor.
Council reports. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, I just had a question. Would you like to speak about the article or the letter or stuff that's going on? A couple people asked me. I said, I don't know, just what I read in the paper regarding the Bellingham Herald.
Or the letter I have that basically has Linville everything redacted but like two lines.
Yeah, that one.
I'll let our clerk handle that.
Yeah.
Most egregious.
Obviously, we made a records request for a redacted letter version of a letter between the city of Bellingham and Costco, where it appears that the city of Bellingham is offering things to a private entity and not letting the rest of the city know. What they have let us know is that they are currently negotiating policies with one corporate entity that will affect every part of Bellingham, but only that one entity is negotiating it with them. There will be a public process on it, but we made a request for the letter because we felt that there was nothing in state law that allows them to negotiate privately a citywide policy with one company. Unfortunately, there is likely no one interested in filing a lawsuit over the fact that they withheld the letter from us. The Attorney General's office did weigh in. I have a pretty good relationship with Tim Ford. He's the Special Assistant Attorney General for Government Accountability, is his full title. He's also called the Open Government Ombudsman. And we had a pretty good discussion. I'll admit I was pretty worked up about it. we had a pretty good discussion where he openly said that basically there are two cases that have opened up an exemption that has allowed governments, I'm speaking as someone who works for government now, that have allowed governments to basically more broadly define what they can keep secret from the public, now apparently including negotiations with a private company over citywide policies. I didn't like it. I made that pretty clear in the paper, I think. The mayor hired me to be an advocate for open government, and I saw this as an extension of that, so I did that. You know, we made the request for the letter because, as you may have seen in the article, Bellingham is basically creating a new backdoor to its city, and we're the welcoming mat.
Right.
At Slater Road. So we wanted to try to protect our community by seeing what exactly they were promising Costco, and is there some way that we can help mitigate for that? So that's kind of where it is. I'm not sure.
Well, and it seemed like it did not fall under the executive privilege of real estate or personnel, and those are the only two things that I...
There's a deliberative process exemption that allows them to withhold things that are still being discussed policy-wise. But the exemption generally is for employee staff-to-staff mm-hmm. discussions. The courts have also extended that to union negotiations where the staff is formulating their negotiating side. They've also extended it to leases of court property prior to the lease being finalized. The city of Bellingham has taken it one step further. And just based on the precedent, no one knows without going to court what would happen, basically. I believe it violates the spirit of what the law was meant to be in the 70s when voters approved it. But the city of Bellingham, I think the city of Bellingham is more focused on what they can legally defend in court than what the spirit of that law says, because they're trying to keep Costco, which I totally respect that. I understand that. We were trying to get them, but just it was my opinion we should have.
Sam's okay with it.
I'm over it.
I just like to make a suggestion to whoever makes the agendas that if we can put action items first that may require public opinion and discussion items later, I think that would be better for the public than to have to sit, like tonight, they would have had to sit through all these discussions if they wanted to talk about the Planning Commission or the Rural Avenue thing. And I don't think that's, when we're just discussing things, I don't see why we need to have people sitting around. And same with a staff issue. If there's something, a staff making a presentation, I don't think they should have to wait till the end of the night and maybe or maybe not get to, you know, speak, you know, because we come to that 9 o'clock witching hour type thing.
It was Yori.
Oh, okay. So that's my thought as we look through the agendas to be a little more public friendly.
Councilperson Mutzler, then Zimmerman.
We may not know what the public. I actually thought there would be people based on some Facebook interaction that might have wanted to weigh in on the nonprofit. Anyway, I wanted to ask staff, Director Burnett, on the matter of downtown development. We had a council meeting last month, and which we apparently directed you to do certain things for us, bring some things back to us. I kind of left, wasn't quite sure what we had directed you to do, so I waited for the minutes to come out and read the minutes and still not quite sure. I just wanted to make sure that we gave you, because I wasn't sure for myself, clear direction as to what we wanted you to do to bring back to us some strategies for the downtown. The minutes recorded all the things you gave us, a menu of stuff, but I couldn't find record of council saying we like this, this, or this. And did you pick that up from what we did or did
well,
or not?
Well,
I looked at, you know, the head nods, and there were a lot of head nods, and there were some head shakes. The main ones that we're pursuing immediately are ones that are the faster ones, I guess, the ones that might already be implied, that would be more of advertising or getting the word out, you know, increased SEPA thresholds are an example. The reuse of buildings is another example. We're also pushing forward on the transportation-related ones, and I think that was a major one. We're looking and seeing whether or not downtown does, in fact, generate less trips, and that was something that was looked at, I believe, as having a potentially substantial change. We're not looking at the water and sewer reductions, and I believe that was kind of where we got some head nods, just because for single family it was already at 50%, and for commercial and office space, there were the mechanisms where they could reduce it substantially without us changing anything. That's already there. But if there are other items that you feel direction was provided that I didn't pick up on, then I am absolutely happy to look at them. And
so how does this kind of play out? My only concern, I really don't know what we can do for downtown. I don't know if we can do anything. But if we kind of let it kind of hang there, there could be development that's not going to do anything. I'm going to wait for the city to do whatever X is, and they don't pull the trigger. And we need to maybe do it or just shut it down so that things can continue. I think we can stifle.
The direction was you bring it back to committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To consolidate to dial it down to where we have a, rather than discuss 15 different items, we discuss a few back to committee. So when are you planning on?
That's the other part of it is I had a time away from work scheduled over the next couple of weeks,
sure.
And I didn't want to bring back something that was half done to then further delay it. So it wouldn't be the next committee, but it would most likely be the committee after, which would be the second meeting.
So you felt like we did provide direction. I just couldn't find it in the discussion. Your head nods, maybe that was the signal or something like that. I wasn't sure that we had provided some consensus to you. Maybe we did.
I guess the main thing I took out of it was one of the directives that we heard from some other jurisdictions, and that was do whatever you can and don't try to use just one or two, but try to have a lot of different options out there. So there's a lot of different ways that people could find a way to yes from the city.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any other council reports? Council Zerna?
Mr. Mayor. I got a call here last week, and I wasn't able to attend to it. And I was asked some questions I couldn't answer. And Lyle Galloway, he's a past president of various wildlife restoration groups. And he's also a Ferndale grad. He did come here tonight, and I'll drag him up here because he had a question regarding the boat launch and things like that.
He's a crystal tricycle group.
Is that what he is? Okay. Well, he's right here.
Justifiable to have him speak.
Yeah. Lyle?
I have to find that person. Searching for that person's name because that person has been replaced by another person. It's working. Just kind of a two-fold question. Thank you for giving this up. The first one is the most extended.
Come forward to the microphone. Make yourself official. Who are you? Where do you come from?
Okay, I'm Lyle Galloway. Most of you know who I am anyway. My first question was, and I sent an email pertaining to cleaning the boat launch up here at Ferndale, and it has been done. I had to go to town and do something, so I missed it. So I checked it myself. Thank you very much.
Great.
If that was your issue or not.
We don't know how that happened.
Okay. Great job. Thank you, whoever did it. And then the other one was as a follow-up.
Order, just mark that down. We don't have any knowledge of that.
A follow-up on the other issue, too, Mayor Jensen, was where they're at with the future development of the new boat launch that possibly might take place.
Ah, that's a long
answer. Yeah. So that can go to discussion on a later date, so be it tonight. But please keep me in tune.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The new boat launch he's talking about is to add a boat launch that could be naturally scoured in the, we're calling it riverfront place?
River Place.
Facility, which is soccer fields, boat launches, outdoor theaters.
Taco time.
Taco time.
The magical land.
tacos and parks.
Moving on. Someday we're going to see some progress. Okay, so
I haven't seen search in a while.
We don't know anything about the boat launch. We were not involved at all.
Yeah.
We don't know how it got cleared.
Simone.
Okay, department reports. Finance director.
Nothing.
City administrator.
Nothing.
Good thing. You're making the right motion. Planning director.
Nothing.
Public work. Clerk.
I do have one thing. I just want to let everyone know, last time, Yori, try to get my deputy clerk to say this, but she held off, and I appreciate it. My wife and I are expecting our second child in February. Yori was going to steal my thunder, so I thought I'd let you all know.
And pretty soon you'll have one of these in your hand before you know it.
That's going to be a strain on the racing, though, isn't it? The challenge is still there.
I've been going to physical therapy, so it's on.
He made up an affliction, and so that he diminished his expectations.
I don't think we had any medical conditions. The challenge is there regardless.
Oh, I'm going to beat him by 6 minutes.
Okay.
Six minutes.
Now we're still there.
Wow.
Police department. Have we set the date? The date? Okay. Somewhere in the end of December, we're having some kind of celebration.
Christmas.
What's your
celebration of what?
Some move.
Celebration grand opening.
Well, I thought it was going to be the 13th of September.
Yeah,
no, that's the date is becoming rather fluid. It's like, remember when you used to take your shoes to the hardware store? It's going to be the end of month. Some month.
We're adjourned?
We're adjourned. All in favor, say it by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned.